here on VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Gregory Stockel, and Katie Weaver. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has urged Russia to be more open about its military activities near Ukraine. Ukraine claims Russia kept tens of thousands of troops and equipment near their common border after completing military exercises earlier this year. We call on Russia to be transparent about its military activities, Stoltenberg told reporters Monday after talks in Belgium with Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba. It is important to prevent escalations and reduce tensions, the NATO chief added. Asked whether he feared a possible invasion of Russia into Ukraine, he said, "What we see is a significant, large Russian military buildup." Kuleba called on NATO for help to strengthen Ukraine. He added that his country needed to prepare for all possible situations. Russia annexed Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula in 2014 and supported a separatist movement that broke out that year in eastern Ukraine. Ukraine's defense ministry has said about 90,000 Russian troops are stationed not far from their border and in rebel-controlled areas in Ukraine's east. Last week, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said American officials had been in close contact with European allies and partners about Russia's military moves near Ukraine. After talks with Ukraine's Kuleba in Washington on Friday, Blinken said the U.S. is not sure of Russia's plans. But he added, "From what they've done in the past, we have real concerns about what we're seeing in the present." Blinken said the United States is committed to supporting Ukraine's security and territorial independence. Last week, a Russian government spokesman dismissed Western media reports suggesting that Russia may be planning to invade Ukraine. "Russia doesn't threaten anyone," government spokesman Dmitry Peskov said. "The movement of troops on our territory shouldn't be a cause for anyone's concern," he added. I'm Brian Lynn.
Big Bird is a popular and beloved character from the children's television show Sesame Street. Recently, Big Bird wrote on his official Twitter page that he had been vaccinated against COVID-19. Big Bird wrote, My wing is feeling a little sore, but it'll give my body an extra protective boost that keeps me and others healthy. The COVID-19 shot just became available to children between the ages of 5 and 11. Conservative politicians in the United States immediately pushed back. Texas Senator Ted Cruz, for example, criticized Big Bird for what he called government propaganda. Lisa Booth of Fox News, a conservative media agency, described Big Bird's tweet as brainwashing children. Sesame Street has faced criticism in the past from conservatives who are unhappy with its connections to U.S. public broadcasting, which receives federal money. Nearly 50 years ago, Sesame Street pushed children to get the measles vaccine, another infectious virus. It showed Big Bird and other children getting the shot. The move was similar to other public service campaigns that used characters on the show to teach children helpful safety tips, like looking both ways before crossing the street. Thomas Doherty is an American Studies professor at Brandeis University. He said, "What Big Bird is doing is part of a long tradition, but what's different now, of course, is that everything is political and everything is contentious. If something is contentious, it is likely to cause people to argue or disagree." Doherty added, "Something that we all wanted a year ago, the vaccine, is now this matter of great contention. Conflict between American television and American politics has been around since the 1950s. In 1952, I Love Lucy did not use the word pregnant during one show because executives thought it would cause a problem. In the early 1990s, the show Murphy Brown found itself in a notable dispute during the 1992 presidential campaign. Dan Quayle, Vice President to George H.W. Bush, criticized the unmarried Murphy's pregnancy as an insult of fatherhood and against American morals. Robert Thompson is director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University in New York. He said, "When there is a mass media as commanding and powerful as television, that's always going to be a battleground over what messages get out there." Big Bird's message came at a time when educational messages for children are under increased criticism. Schools are experiencing criticism from parents and elected officials over how racial and social justice are taught. And education officials have faced conflicts on how they should deal with face coverings and COVID-19 testing requirements. I'm Gregory Stockel.
Thank you. Scientists have long said getting a good night's sleep is important to your health. The U.S. National Institute of Health says lack of sleep may even increase the risk of impaired brain activity or cognitive decline and Alzheimer's disease. Now, an American team of scientists reports that too much sleep might be similarly linked to such conditions. Researchers at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis, Missouri, did the sleep study. Their findings were published in the September issue of the scientific publication Brain. The study examined 100 adults who had been under medical observation for cognitive ability, the ability to think, for an average of 4.5 years. The average age of the study subject was 75. 88 of the group had been identified as free of cognitive impairment or damage. 11 subjects were judged very mildly impaired, and one was identified as mildly impaired. During the study, they were asked to complete several tests for signs of cognitive decline. The tests are combined into a cognitive score. The higher the score, the better. They also wore electroencephalography devices for 4 to 6 nights to measure their brain activity during sleep. Overall, cognitive scores declined for those who slept less than 4.5 hours or more than 6.5 hours per night, as measured by EEG. But the scores stayed the same for those in the middle range. Dr. Brendan Lucy is director of the Washington University Sleep Medicine Center and led the research. He said, "Our study suggests that there is a middle range or sweet spot for total sleep time for best cognitive performance. Short and long sleep times were associated with worse cognitive performance, perhaps due to insufficient sleep or poor sleep quality," Lucy added. Greg Elder is a sleep researcher at Northumbria University in Newcastle, Britain. He was surprised about the findings that sleeping longer than 6.5 hours was linked with cognitive decline. He wrote in the conversation, "This is low when we consider that older adults are recommended to get between 7 and 8 hours of sleep every night." Elder also noted that the research did not consider other information about the individuals studied, including their general health or economic conditions. Other studies have shown that lack of sleep was linked with cognitive decline. A small 2018 study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences found that losing just one night of sleep led to an increase in beta amyloid production. Beta amyloid is a metabolic waste product found in between brain cells. It has been long linked to brain disorders, such as Alzheimer's disease. The National Sleep Foundation advises that healthy adults need between 7 and 9 hours of sleep per night. Babies, young children, and teens need even more sleep for their growth and development. And people over 65 should also get 7 to 8 hours per night, the foundation says. One unanswered question from the Washington University study is whether increasing sleep time for short sleepers would help their cognitive performance. But lead writer Lucy said each person's sleep needs are individual. If people feel rested, there is no need to change how they sleep. But those who are not sleeping well should know that sleep problems often can be treated, Lucy said. Dr. David Holtzman, another top researcher on the study, added, "It suggests that sleep quality may be key as opposed to simply total sleep." I'm Katie Weaver.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int, or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. America's Civil War in the 1860s did not have the full support of the people. Many said they did not care who won, North or South. They just wanted to be left alone. In the North, many young men refused to be drafted into the Union Army. Some of their protests turned violent. Southern leaders were pleased with the anti-war movement in the North. Confederate General Robert E. Lee saw it as a sign of weakness in the Northern war effort. He also saw it as an opening for a military victory. Lee hoped for a final, decisive blow that would bring the war to an end. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe talk about General Lee's campaign north to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania.
Gettysburg was a small town. Many roads came together there. Robert E. Lee needed those roads to pull his army together quickly. He had 70,000 men in all, but they were spread over a wide area of southern Pennsylvania. Some were at York to the east. Some were at Carlisle to the north, and most were at Chambersburg to the west. All of them were ordered to move against the Union force at Gettysburg. General Robert E. Lee had not planned to go to Gettysburg. He had planned to capture Harrisburg, the state capital, and then Philadelphia. If successful, he would turn south to seize Baltimore and Washington. Lee had not worried about the large Union Army of the Potomac. He believed it was far behind him in Virginia. But Lee was wrong. The Union Army had followed him, and it had reached Gettysburg first.
The first group of Northern soldiers formed a thin line of defense outside Gettysburg. The first group of Southern soldiers attacked this line. It was the morning of July 1st, 1863. When the guns began to roar, both sides hurried more men to the front. After hours of fighting, the Confederates had pushed the Union soldiers back through the town. The Union soldiers formed a new line along a place called Cemetery Hill. General Robert E. Lee decided not to attack the hill immediately. He would wait for more men. But as he waited, more and more Union soldiers arrived. By sunrise the next day, Lee's 70,000 men faced a Union army of 90,000 men.
The Confederates attacked both sides of the Union line. They moved the Union soldiers a little, but then the Union soldiers came back again. The Confederates could not hold the line. The fighting stopped at sunset. Union Commander George Meade met with his generals. He said he was sure General Lee would attack again the next day. The next attack, Meade said, would be against the center of the Union line. Meade was right. Lee planned to send 15,000 men against the Union center. They would be under the command of General George Pickett.
When the sun rose on July 3rd, the Union troops were ready. They watched as the Confederate troops set up their cannon. More than 130 of these big guns were aimed at the center of the Union line. The morning passed. The day grew hotter. A little past 1 o'clock in the afternoon, a Confederate gun fired once. Then again. That was the signal to attack. All at once, the Confederate artillery thundered with a deafening roar. The cannon sent iron and smoke into the Union soldiers on Cemetery Hill. Within minutes, hundreds lay dead or dying. Union artillery on the hill answered the Confederate cannon. Men lay flat on the ground. They prayed for the shelling to stop. Finally, it did, and the smoke of battle began to clear.
Now the Union soldiers could see across the valley. They watched as the Confederate soldiers formed a long line. It was a sight to take your breath away. Facing Cemetery Hill, the Confederates stood shoulder to shoulder in a line almost 2 kilometers long. Sunlight shone from their guns. Their battle flags waved. Slowly, the line began to move. It seemed more like a parade than an attack. Shouts went up and down the Union line. Here they come. Here come the rebels.
Thousands of Confederate soldiers moved across the valley outside Gettysburg. Union artillery opened fire. The guns tore open big holes in the Confederate battle line. But the Southerners kept moving forward up the hill. Union soldiers rose up from behind stone walls and fallen trees. They poured even more gunfire into the Confederate line. More and more bodies fell to the ground. Still, the line moved forward. A few Confederates reached the Union line, but not enough to seize it. They were shot down. Suddenly, the Confederates began racing down the hill. Many raised their hands in surrender. 15,000 began the attack. Only half returned. The Battle of Gettysburg was over. The Union commander, General Meade, was told that the Confederate attack had been broken. He said simply, "Thank God." The Confederate commander, General Lee, said, "This has been a sad day for us. A sad day."
Lee's invasion of the North had failed. There was only one thing he could do now: retreat. He must get his army back to Virginia. He could only hope that the Union army was hurt too badly to chase him. The line of wagons carrying wounded soldiers was 25 kilometers long. Many of the wounded needed treatment, but the wagons were not permitted to stop for any reason. Suffering was terrible. An officer who led the wagon train said he learned more about the horrors of war on that one trip than he had learned in all of his battles. 20,000 Confederate soldiers were killed, wounded, or listed as missing in the Battle of Gettysburg. 23,000 Union soldiers were killed, wounded, or missing.
General Meade lost so many men that he was in no hurry to chase General Lee. He believed it might be best to let Lee escape than to take a chance on losing what remained of the Army of the Potomac. Meade waited for a week until his army was stronger, but by then Lee and his men had crossed safely back into Virginia. President Abraham Lincoln was angry. He had told General Meade that driving the Confederates out of the North was not enough. The Southern Army must be destroyed. "We had them," Lincoln said. "We had only to stretch out our hands and take them. And nothing I could do or say could make the army move."
President Lincoln believed that General Meade had made a mistake, but he felt that the general had ability. Lincoln was thankful for what Meade had done at Gettysburg. He said Meade would continue to command the Army of the Potomac. In November of 1863, President Lincoln went to Gettysburg. He attended the opening of a new burial place for the Union soldiers who had died in the great battle there.
The governor of Pennsylvania had asked the president to say a few words at the ceremony. Lincoln agreed. He felt it was his duty to go, to honor the brave men who lost their lives to save the Union. Lincoln hoped his words might help lift the spirit of the nation. Lincoln did not have much time to prepare his speech. He wrote it down the night before the ceremony. Lincoln was sure the speech was not a good one, but it came to be one of the most famous speeches in American history.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.